If you like the Live Wild podcast and enjoy hunting-related apparel, I've got you covered. I just launched some great t-shirts, hats, and sweatshirts under my own Live Wild brand. You can find them now on my website, remywarren.com. I just want to say thanks again, everyone, for all the support, and I really hope you enjoy these designs as much as I do. Who knows? Maybe you'll head over to my website and find your next lucky hat. I'm Remy Warren, and I've lived my life in the wild. As a professional guide and hunter, I've spent thousands of days perfecting my craft. I want to give that knowledge to you. In this podcast, we relive some of my past adventures as I give you practical hunting tips to make you more successful. Whether you're just getting started or a lifelong hunter, this podcast will bring you along on the hunt and teach you how to live wild. This podcast is presented by Mountain Tough and Yeti. I partnered with Mountain Tough because a lot of the tactics and hunt styles I talk about in this podcast require you to be in the best physical shape you can. Their app is designed for hunters to get you ready for the backcountry or any hunt you have planned this fall. Yeti's been a longtime supporter of mine, and they make some of the toughest products out there that are built to last and they're built for the wild. Welcome back to the Live Wild podcast, everyone. This week, we're going to continue the theme of elk month, and now we're going to be looking at that mid-September timeframe. So if you missed last week we talked about early September or the kind of that pre-rut phase. We really looked at the behavior and then some tactics to use during that time of year. But this week, we're going to be focusing on that peak rut, the peak rut tactics, and when those bulls have already gathered up those cows and they just start to go crazy, when they start to be vocal and start to really dive into the rut. So we're going to look first at the elk behavior this time of year. Then we're going to look at the most effective calling strategies, as well as some tactics that don't involve calling. I'm also going to dive in a little bit and dispel that myth of call shy elk and just kind of break down what that philosophy started from and maybe why it's just slightly misguided. But before we do that, I want to share the story of a giant bull that we coaxed in where we were told calls would never work. A few years back, my brother drew a limited entry tag for elk in Montana. So he drew a really good unit in the Missouri Breaks, which I think is no secret. There's big bulls there and can be a great hunt. But he ended up drawing the rifle tag. So the rifle tag allows you to hunt with the rifle season, but also you can hunt it during archery. And then there's archery specific tags as well. So because he had the archery and the rifle tag, you know, he was going to be super picky. I've had some friends that had that area. This was, the area was doing really well when he drew it. And, I had a friend that had got taken like a 390, almost 400 inch bull out of there a couple years earlier. And so, you know, we knew the caliber elk that were in that area. So he loves bow hunting, but he also wanted to take a big bull. So our plan was we were going to go there during the archery season, but instead of just shooting a normal bull that maybe he would shoot if he had the archery tag, he was going to be super picky. It's like 380 plus bull or bust. So we decided to go in there during the archery season and see what we could turn up. Use it also as scouting to say, okay, well, here's where the bulls are. Here's what the kind of bulls that are around this year, you know, kind of gauge like, okay, are we going to be at like find the big bulls during the best time to find elk when they're rutting? So we were both guiding, but we ended up kind of being able to take a little bit of time off right in the middle of the rut, take a few days to head over and try our luck during the archery season. So we get in there and, you know, this particular area has a very good reputation of not being able to call bulls in. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. And, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about what call shy elk means and why you might not be able to call elk in certain places a little bit later. But, you know, everything we've ever heard from guys that have bow hunted, it was like, you can't call in a bull here, and you definitely aren't going to call in a big bull. But our style of hunting is we like to call elk. So I was like, you know what? And we weren't being we were being so picky that it's like, well, we might as well just call and mess around and have a good time, and we'll call some elk in, whether we're going to shoot them or not. We just wanted to get some encounters. So it started like first part of the morning on the first day we're there glassing and not really seeing much. And I hear a bugle down below, so I'm like, oh, okay, bugle. was like, well, you know what? I'm going to do what I like to do, bugle back. So he bugle back and get this bull really fired up. And he drops down into this kind of like a coulee area with more timber. We get down in there, and I just start doing our same call sequence. 3 days before we actually went to the spot, we called in a big bull for a client in just a timbered area and just doing the exact same tactics that we were using somewhere else. And sure enough, call in like a small six-point bull, and he was just acting dumb, like could have shot him any day of the week, you know, and he's a good, decent bull. Like I think if we were both bow hunting, he would have shot it. So we're like, well, okay, the call shy, uncallable elk thing is just out the window here. Like the elk are being elk, they're calling. We're just going to use those tactics and see what we can find. So as the hunt goes on, we end up being in this one spot pre-daylight. And I rip a bugle, and the bull that bugles back is just that guttural, just deep, mean bugle. And I'm like, all right, that's a bull we need to take a look at. I don't know what, like, if you could judge a bull based on bugle, that's a 400-inch bull. That thing just sounded gnarly. So we get I just get the mean, mature bull bugle going. I'm like, I think this is a big, mature bull. We're just going to act like another big, mature bull, and we're going to act like we want to steal his cows. So start ripping bugles back and forth, and I can hear cows around. So I can tell that the bull is really trying to coax these cows into him, so by bugling back and forth, and we're going to move in tight and try to make it appear as though we're stealing his cows, and if he wants to come play, he's got to come play. So start bugling back and forth. I'm throwing cow calls. I'm doing what I like to call the cow party, just and just cows are making noise all over. The real cows are calling back to the cow calls, and the bulls bugling back to the bugle, and it's just like what you dream of, peak rut, just bugle fest. Yet we haven't seen the bull yet. So get set up. And now the bull's like rounding up his cows, and he's going over these little ridges, and we just keep chasing him. And every time we get to one ridge, you know, we try to get there as fast as possible. Once he moves over, there's some cows that we'd kind of pushed around. And so we get to this one point where we were kind of moving after him, and now he's like up above us. And so I tell Jason, like, just go forward. And he gets into position ahead of me because the bull had just crested over. So I bugle, and the bull turns around and starts coming back our way. And I can see his antler tips. I'm like, oh, big bull. Like, this is within what you want to shoot. I give him the sign, like, get ready. It's on. So the bull starts to come across the opening. And it was really tight, like pinyon juniper type country. And the bull walks through, and Jason draws, and he's anchored, and he's got a body shot, but he can't see the head. And I can see the head, but I'm now like further back and can't tell him, like, I should just yell, like, rip it. Like, I have no clue what he can see or what I can't see. And so he's like not wanting to shoot a smaller bull, and the bull like walks off, and as it moves out of his shooting lane, it was, you know, could have easily had a shot. As he moves out of his shooting lane, he realizes that was the big bull. So we ended up chasing that bull a little bit longer. We called him in two more times, but just it was so thick that we just couldn't get any other shots. Unfortunately, he ended up not getting that bull, but we did call him within range. He did have a shot. You know, that's where it's one of those things, like, he knew it was a bull. He didn't know how big it was because he couldn't see everything, and there was other bulls in there. If we were just hunting and he didn't have that rifle tag later on, he probably would have shot that bull and then would have had his biggest bull with a bow for sure. But, you know, it was one of those things where we went into that area and we got into bulls and found a giant bull and got a bull to come in to the calls during that just time when elk are being elk, rutted up, ready to play. And that was it was a really cool experience in there, just like having that encounter with such a big elk. Oh, and as a side note, we did all that, and he ended up not finding a big bull during the rifle season. So that was hindsight's one of those things where you're like, man, we passed up a lot of really good elk with the bow, and he ended up not finding anything better with the rifle. So, you know, looking back on a hunt, sometimes those are the things that you're like, oh, man, I should have done this different, or I should have done that different. But also, we had an incredible hunt together, and it was a lot of fun. So I think that you know, you never know what's going to happen, but maybe I think now we've got the philosophy, hey, if you got a tag in your pocket and you get a good opportunity, make good on it. So when we talk about the peak of the rut, when just elk are going crazy, that kind of iconic thing that you, every hunter, or at least most bow hunters that are encountering elk or have an elk tag in their pockets, like, this is what I want to experience. I want to experience that rut crazed bull that's bugling and coming in and calling and raking and doing the whole thing, right? But I think in order to understand the tactics to exploit that bull and be successful, I think we first have to kind of understand, well, what are elk doing? What's the behavior that's going on this time of year? Because just because the elk are calling and they can be all rut crazed and going crazy doesn't mean that it's easy. It can actually be one of the more difficult times to shoot what I would say is like the more mature bull, because if you're going to use those calling tactics, you're going to have to call a bull in that necessarily doesn't need to come into your calls. And then the other thing is, you know, there's a lot of other eyes around. So there's some things going against you. I always like to look at, like, okay, what's the best part about this? And then what are some things that make it more difficult? So I think the things that are really good about this time of year is if there's action, right? If they're calling, it helps you locate the elk. They're going to be responsive to bugling. They're going to be responsive to calling back and forth. And so it helps you locate elk, especially in more thick country. Another thing is they're just more active throughout the day. So you have longer periods in the mornings and evenings, maybe even midday, to make plays and find elk. A few of the things that are working against you, we kind of touched on it, lots of eyes, lots of other elk running around. Also, the behavior of elk during this time of year, where they might gather up their cows and try moving away because they've been fighting. They're starting to get tired. It's just a natural response to the calls and other elk that are going on. So there's a lot of legwork involved. Sometimes you're right on elk, but it's just like anything during the rut. They're moving. They're constantly moving. So it takes a lot of physical energy to kind of stay up and not lose those elk. So let's look at the behavior a little bit. What's the herd doing? So this time of year, what I would consider the peak, right, is when bulls are really jockeying for those cows, and maybe even like they're going to be breeding as well. So what happens is the bulls will gather up harems, and the bull that runs the herd is, we're going to call, the herd bull. And this is the bull that's like going to be the primary breeder. Now, it's not always the biggest bull, and the herd bull can change daily. Elk are just constantly vying for that position of controlling the herd, because the bull that controls the herd gets the breeding rights, if you think of it like that. And then there's other elk running around, other bulls running around that are going to be our satellite elk. And these are the elk that are just jockeying for that herd bull position. Now, some of them will be mature bulls. And generally, what happens in a well-balanced herd is the fact, like, the bigger, mature, strongest bull wins the herd. And then there's these other bulls that are just wanting to get in on the action. There's other bulls that maybe have a chance of winning the herd themselves. And then there's other elk, like more immature elk, that are just looking to sneak one away or get lucky. They're just looking for that cow that's coming into estrus that you can just pull away and breed. I've actually heard a study somewhere that, like, pretty much most elk will at some point get a chance to breed a cow if they, you know, stay within that herd. Like, even real immature elk will actually be able to pull cows away. And that's what they're trying to do. So they're like, I'm going to try it. There's so much going on, those big herds. They want to pull cows away and get some breeding in. So what happens is you've got these massive herds, and then you've got certain bulls that are in charge, and they're fighting and vying for those cows, but they're also controlling the herd. They're also moving the cows. They're also kind of dictating what goes on. The rest of the year, it's a lead cow. It's a cow that generally kind of controls the herd. And now it's going to be more of the bulls are, I guess, in some ways controlling the herd. The cows are still definitely like dictating, okay, we're going to go over here. And then the bulls kind of stop them from doing what they're trying to do, because they're busy fighting. They're busy doing their thing. They're busy trying to take control of that herd or harem to breed. So when we look at the behavior like that, you think of it like the peak rut. Let's just paint the picture of the peak rut, like the best day, the day that you really are hoping to see, and what's going to go on that day. And what's probably happening is bulls are going to start bugling in the morning, and then they're going to start moving their cows and like taking control of that herd. Now, what'll probably happen is some of those satellite bulls are going to try to break off groups of that elk's harem, and that bull that's in charge is going to have to fight those other bulls. Now, there's going to be bulls that probably are equally as strong or think they're equally as strong that are going to want to go in there and fight that other bull that has the herd bull, and try to become the herd bull himself. So what happens is kind of this confusion where you get a lot of bugling, a lot of cow calling. Then you've also got cows that are coming into heat. So you've got herd bulls that are going to be trying to breed those specific cows or tend to the cows that are going to go into estrus and be breedable. So what we can do when we find that scenario where like this thing is going off, this just like beehive of elk going crazy, is we're going to be trying to insert ourselves as another elk in this herd and try to entice the bull to come into our setup. So there's two kinds of bulls that we're going to be trying to hunt here. It could be the herd bull, which is going to be the hardest one to call in because he's so busy managing those cows and just fighting the elk that are actually confronting him that it's really difficult to call that bull to you. And then the other bulls or the satellite bulls are going to be the ones that are the easier to call in because they're just looking for any elk, like any cow to breed, or they're in the periphery. They might be in the middle of the mix, but they're going to be the easiest ones to call in. I'd say most of the bulls that get killed this time of year are some form of satellite bull. It doesn't mean that they're small bulls, just means that they aren't controlling the herd at that moment. So I think I'm going to dive into a couple calling tactics, and then I want to talk about what I would consider like call shy elk, because I think that that's a question that comes up a lot. It's like, well, should I call this time of year or should I not? And that's just personal hunting preference. My personal hunting preference is I enjoy calling. I enjoy calling for a couple of reasons. One, I just like this time of year because it's the only time you can really interact with animals like that. It's a lot of fun for me. Another reason that I do it is because I got really good at it guiding so much because I decided like, you know, for a lot of the people that I would guide had not had any Western big game hunting experience, maybe no spot and stalk experience. So we'd find a bull elk or whatever and herd and they'd have trouble sneaking in. And it was always difficult to sneak in with more people. So I thought, well, it's a lot better tactic where I can control things if I'm just calling the elk to us. So because of that, I got really good at calling elk and that became my preferred tactic to hunting elk. It's not the only way to hunt them, but I think that it's a fun way to talk about it. It's an enjoyable way to hunt them and can be very successful. So first we're going to talk about some of the calling strategies this time of year. And I think the first thing to talk about is how do you call in a bull? And I think the thing that I believe is where people go, okay, these elk aren't callable, or you can't call in elk because they've seen so many people calling and they're call shy. And I think that that's a little bit misguided in the fact that you have to understand the scenario that you're calling at. I think the big news flash here is you cannot call in every elk, okay? It's just not, like if you're just assuming that because an elk's calling, you can call that elk in, then you're completely misguided. And I think a lot of people have that misguided perception of saying like, oh, well, because that elk's calling and he wouldn't come to my call, he's not callable. You got to think of it like this, like just like a very bold feeling of saying like, oh, every elk that calls is, can be called in. No, it needs to be the right scenario to call a bull in. It's just like a mule deer hunter that is going to spot and stalk a mule deer. Not every deer is stalkable in that position where they're at, right? You could have a deer that's out in the middle of this giant open basin with zero cover and there's 20 bucks in a bachelor group and the wind's going in every direction, right? You look at that and you go, oh, well, I see deer. Well, just because you see those deer doesn't mean that you can get close enough for a shot. Doesn't mean you can stalk in because it's not the right opportunity for you. Now, maybe those deer will spread out. Maybe one deer will pop off and he'll go bed in a spot where the wind's constant. He's bedded. You've got a good approach. Now that deer's stalkable. It's the same with calling elk. Just because an elk's calling, just because things are going on, doesn't mean that that particular bull is going to be callable in that situation. You have to have the right situation. So you have to have, first of all, an elk that wants to play. And that means an elk that is going to be callable. And the more you do it, the more you can kind of pinpoint these specific elk that are going to be callable and for the certain scenario that you're calling in. So what you need is in order for an elk to be callable, he has to get worked up to the point that he chooses to come and fight. Now, there's two responses that elk have in nature when they're bugling back and forth. One is they're going to defend their herd or they're going to take their herd away. And just because you're calling doesn't mean that they think that you're a human and they're going to take the herd away. It's a natural response to other elk. So what we need to do is we need to get a bull worked up to the point where he's like, okay, I'm ready to fight. So here's a couple calling strategies that I use, a couple things that I think are key to working a bull. The first is, you know, just getting a bull where, whether it's a herd or it's a single bull, whatever, he's in that frequency or that pattern of calling a lot, where a lot of calling is going to be necessary to call him in, and he's calling a lot. I have called the bulls that have wore their voice out, calling back and forth. It's because he's worked up to the point of a frenzy. Now, when you work a bull to a frenzy, there's a few things that I think are a little bit of tricks that I like to use. The first is, you know, you got to go with what's working. I've called in bulls, let's see, like whole elk herds, just bulls everywhere, satellite bulls, like just the herds kind of scattered bulls in everywhere. And I've called in bulls using just a cow call, but like they like this long estrus whine of a cow call, like this like long whine sound. And every time I do that, the bull would bugle back, right? And it's like, okay, well, that's working for this bull. I'm going to continue that call. Some bulls, you know, you got to really match their posture and their dominance. So if you're going to call to that herd bull, or maybe you just want to call in any bull, but you've got a herd bull that's just ripping mean bugles, I try to match that, rip those mean bugles back, sound mature, so that the other elk that want to come investigate are like, okay, this is where the real action is. They believe that I'm a bull that now has the herd. And it also, it works in tandem for calling in that herd bull. So the times that I've called in that herd bull, I've been very aggressive calling. And then by doing that aggressive calling, a lot of times I'll call in a lot of other satellite bulls in the mix. A couple calls that I think are really effective and something that you should learn if you're going to bugle, I think chuckling is key. It's that, I actually should have had my bugles with me, but it's just easy to just do it with my voice. So we're going to do like that chuckling sound. It just, it gets those bulls to that next level of like, I don't like that. It's very, I don't know what it is about it, but once you start that chuckling sequence, you'll notice that the other bulls, like a bull that starts chuckling back, is going to be more apt to displaying dominance and being callable. So I'll do my bugles. I'll get a bull worked up with, maybe it's, I start with location bugles, just a long, just, you know, and then as we start to get the cadence and the pace built up, then I start throwing in the like bugle, then chuckle. And then sometimes I'll just throw in that chuckle. Now, another call that I really like to use this time of year is glunking. It's like once I've got a bull worked up, it's the way that he talks to a hot cow, actually. But you'll notice that I've been in a lot of groups of elk where bulls are running everywhere. And you hear this, you can make the sound just hitting the end of your bugle tube with your hand. It's like a, it's like a heavy breathing sound. I know it's kind of hard to, because I don't have my call with me, distinguish the chuckling from the glunking in my little sound effects here. But it's a sound that I think sometimes I do it by blowing into my bugle tube with my mouth. Like, it's like almost like the bull's hitting the roof of his mouth with his tongue. That's a good sound to kind of coax a bull in that extra distance when they're all fired up. Now, I think another calling strategy that works really well is cutting a bull off. Big mature bulls do not like to have their bugles cut off by another bull, because what it's saying is he's bugling to you, but he's also kind of displaying for the cows. And when you cut him off, that really pisses him off. Sometimes just cutting a bull off when you're within a certain proximity is enough to draw him in to your position. Now, a couple other things, raking is a really good tactic to use. And if you hear a bull raking, that's a really good tactic to be able to get in. Last year, I had bulls raking all over and was just able to like move into position and get in tight while they were raking, and then call to other bulls as well. And it gave me like a little bit of time where that bull would be raking and the herd would start to move off, but it'd give me a spot to pinpoint on that bull. Now, I think more than calling is just your positioning. This time of year, you really have to cover ground and be amongst the herd. You're going to have to get in tight. So I think that most of the bulls that I call in, and there's always the odd ones like, oh, it's a lone bull a certain time of year and he's like just looking for elk, right? Where he comes a long distance, but for the most part, once you find a herd of elk where there's a bull that has cows, you really have to do a lot of the ground covering, because why would a bull leave his cows to come into your bugling and your calling? He wouldn't. He's like, I've got my cows. Maybe that bull, maybe you're doing cow calls and bugles. You've got your cows and you're bugling too. Cool. Good on you, bro. I'm over here doing my thing with my ladies. That's what they're thinking. But if you start closing in that distance, and whether he's moving his cows or not, if you keep getting within that proximity of, okay, now this bull's a threat, now this bull's a threat, now this bull's a threat, then at some point you become a threat. And he's going to decide to use his energy to fight you off as opposed to lose his cows. And that's the way that you have to think about this time of year, is everybody's vying for those cows. You need to go in there and be a bull that's also vying for those cows. Now, just because bugling's, I think peak rut, I really like to bugle, but not everybody wants to bugle. Not everybody can bugle. So I've learned, like, guys that are first-time elk hunters, bugling is a thing that you want to start trying and definitely mix into your calling, but cow calling is a lot easier and can also be effective this time of year. So how I use cow calls during this time of year is a couple different ways. If I've bugled and the bull's moving the cows away, what I'll do is I'll try to trail that herd of elk, and then I'll throw out a lot of cow sounds, like almost like the cow group is broken up and it's a little bit disconnected from the main herd. What ends up happening here is, for the most part, sometimes you'll get those bulls that were around in the periphery, those satellite bulls, being like, ooh, here's a group of elk that I can come and try to steal some away from that are a little bit lost right now. I've always thought, you know, what I like to do is, you know, get into a herd and then maybe the bull's pushing cows around and throw out those cow sounds, thinking like, oh, the herd bull's going to come over here and investigate. Sometimes that happens. I think for the most part, what elk end up doing is they like to use their eyes as well. So if you're in that more open country, I think this is where some of that call shy elk comes from, is they're hunting open country. And it's not that they're call shy, it's just that they're trusting their eyes more than they're just trusting their ears or whatever to come into that bow range. So you have to play the calls based on the scenario. If you're set up in an area that's real open, and you're throwing out those cow calls, yeah, it might entice a bull, but he's also going to be like, it sounds like there's 20 animals over there and I see none. Where are the ladies at? Right? So it's like you have to gauge your calling based on the scenario that's happening, the terrain that's happening, and what is reasonably possible that elk might see or might happen, whether you were calling there or not. If you weren't there and an elk heard all those cows, he's going to kind of go to a ridge, look over and be like, I can see over there. Where are the cows at? Okay, I don't see any cows. I'm going to go back to these other cows. So a cow calling can be really effective, but in order for it to be effective, you have to be in the right scenario. You have to be close to the herd, and you're going to want to throw out, I think the best call this time of year is what I would consider like an estrus whine, where it's just about those really long, it's almost like a cow bugling, if you think about it, like high-low, high-low. Let me see. This is a brand new tightly stretched call, but let's see, give it a try. Just like, hey, I'm going into heat. Now, another call that works really well is doing that call, but like if you're a caller and you've got someone set up, actually the times that I've seen cows do this a lot, they're running from a bull. So I'll get that estrus whine going really high pitch and just start running down the hill when I'm calling, trying to draw a bull to the location of the shooter. It's just a really effective call to try to mix into your setup during this time of year when the elk are focused on those hot cows. Now maybe you say, look, I'm not into calling, or maybe, you know, just calling isn't working right now. Maybe the elk are doing most of their crazy rutting activity at night, which definitely happens, especially, well, this year, a lot of the peak rut's going to be during the full moon, and if there's enough light for them to do a lot of it at night, it's cooler during the night, and they can still see, they can still watch out for danger, so they're going to do that, a lot of their activity at night. So during the middle of the day, it might seem pretty slow. one really effective tactic this time of year is sitting and hunting wallows. Wallows can be really productive during the peak rut because they're used more frequently. A wallow is more of, I've talked about it in the past, but a wallow is actually like a perfume station for a bull elk. He goes in there, he pisses all over, he rolls around, he gets that mud on him, and it holds the scent, and it like is a show of dominance and a display for the cows. So what they'll do is, you know, whether they're chasing around right then or not, you're going to notice there's going to be like, oh, there's bulls that are just all black on one side, or, you know, they've just like, they've been rolling in the mud. And when I find that, a good way to kill the herd bull is to kind of just outsmart him, outwit him, and say, where's this bull going to wallow? There's many times where peak rut, I'll watch a herd elk and I'll see there's a bull in there and he's all mudded up. You're like, okay, well, where close by do you think that wallow is? I'll try to locate multiple wallows in that area. And then depending on, I'll watch the elk, and when they wallow can be kind of random. Sometimes it's generally right before they start doing lots of crazy calling. So it could be first thing in the morning, or it can be beginning of the evening, or even middle of the day. Sometimes bulls will go push cows, cows will bed down, then he'll just split off from the group, go wallow, roll around, and then go back. He's like, I'm getting ready. I'm going to go put on my bull elk axe body spray and go chase some ladies, right? So pinpointing those wallows, it actually gets more productive as the rut goes on. I know some people think about sitting wallows early, which it does work as they start to prepare. But for the mature bulls, you're going to get a lot more action and activity on a wallow as that rut picks up and starts to peak. You're going to get bulls pulling away from the group wallowing. You're going to get other elk coming into those wallows. So sitting wallow can be an effective tactic, and it can be most effective during that peak rut time. It can also be an added tactic like in the middle of the day when you want to try to catch a bull away from his herd. Sometimes I'll set up on a wallow middle of the day, and I'll just throw out a couple cow calls every now and then because maybe there's, you know, sometimes you're in an area where there's like 10, 12 wallows in one little zone. How do you get a bull to come to your wallow? Well, I'll sit there, I'll wait, and I'll just throw out a few little cow calls, because sometimes you'll get bulls that go, okay, they pull away from the group and they go, oh, okay, I'm going to go check out this wallow. Or I'll even just throw a few bugles and then splash around in the wallow for a little bit just to sound like, oh, there's a bull wallowing here, to draw the ears of another bull in the distance saying like, oh, I want to go make that my territory instead of this other bull elk. So a wallow can be a really effective way to hunt as well. So it's not just calling. You know, one thing you want to think about, whether you're, no matter what you're hunting, really hunt for the tactics that you like. If you're really good at spot and stock hunting and you aren't so sure about calling, then use those tactics. If you like to wait, then use those tactics. Maybe you're in a scenario where, you know, they aren't really going crazy for the calls. So then you just adjust your tactics for the scenario at hand. Maybe it means you got to sit a little bit because it's hot and everything's a little bit sluggish. Well, they're still going to be using those wallows for the times that they are chasing elk. So sitting in the evening might be really good if a lot of the activity is happening at night. Using a combination of tactics can be one of the most effective ways to hunt. When I think about elk hunting and elk behavior, what needs to happen for elk to just continue to exist is elk need to be elk. They need to breed. They need to chase cows. They need to assert their dominance. Now, in areas where a lot of people say, oh, well, the elk are call shy, calling tactic may not, calling isn't always the best tactic. But also, I feel like just blanket saying these elk can't be called is completely wrong, because it's not the case. There are times where elk will not come to calls, but it doesn't mean that the elk can't be called. It just means that the scenario isn't right for those elk to be called in. It's no different than spot and stalk, where an animal's in a position where it can't be stalked, right? Just because an elk calls doesn't mean that it can be called in, but it doesn't mean that it's uncallable. I would never go as far as saying like these elk are uncallable. So the way that I hunt is I like to call. So I try to find the elk that want to play the game, right? That means that I have to pass up on elk that don't want to play the game to find the elk that do want to play the game. The same goes for somebody that's doing any other kind of hunting, right? You got to find the animals that are exhibiting the behavior that you can exploit. So when I'm hunting elk, I like to call, and I look for those elk that are callable, that are wanting to play the game, that are active, that are bugling, that are going to work up, and that I can work up into a frenzy, that I can kind of exploit that behavior of being able to draw them to my location. And these are just some of the things to think about as you go into that peak rut season. I hope you guys have been enjoying Elk Month. I know I've been really enjoying talking about chasing rutting elk, and I'm excited to get into the Elk Mountains here pretty soon. So next week, we're going to now transition from that peak rut to that kind of post-rut time. And we're going to look over some of those spot and stock tactics, as well as why this can be a really great time to focus in and kill a herd bull. Probably one of the best times, actually, to kill a herd bull. So I think there's so much, and one of the things that I like to focus on is there's so much to know about elk hunting and really just kind of matching your hunt, your tactic with what's going on, when it's going on. I think that we could pretty much talk about hunting elk in September every podcast, and we wouldn't even fill up the docket over a year of just talking about it. But there's so many other things to chase and other tactics to talk about as well. But if you want more elk hunting knowledge, I think that the best place to do that is outdoor class. And I've got, so my class on there is mule deer hunting, but there's some really great elk hunting stuff, and I've gone through it and I approve their messages. So that's a good thing. Corey Jacobson does a really good course on there right now. I really like the way that he hunts, and him and I have I really enjoy getting together with that guy, because when we talk about elk, it's like, we talk about it the same. You know, it's cool when you meet people that have kind of come to the same conclusions about elk hunting, even though you've done it in different places and with different ways, and you just kind of come to the same style of hunting. So I really enjoy those. That's a really good thing to check out. If you've got the outdoor class, you know, check out those elk courses on there. One of the things that I did a few weeks back, you might have heard me kind of advertise it on here, but people that signed up with my code REMI, I actually did like a webinar on mule deer hunting, and it was a lot of fun. It was a great group of guys on there, and then I did a pretty sweet giveaway. I gave away some of the best gear around, Schnee's boots, outdoor, let's see, what did I get? MagView. I had all kinds of, like, backpack from Stone Glacier. I had like a outdoor kit from Gerber. It's about like $2,000 worth of incredible prizes that I was able to gather up. So, and the odds of winning were super good. One of the reasons that I wanted to do that code thing was just so it kind of limited the people in these events. But so in future, if you did that, anytime that I do an event in the future, I'll just send the email to the entire list. But if you're like, hey, I want to check out the outdoor class, you can get a discount either using code LIVEWILD or code REMI. Both are fine. Both should work. And then any events like that in the future, you'll have access to that. So it's just a way that I kind of limit it to my listeners and the podcast listeners or whatever. So that was a lot of fun. And I want to do another one on elk. So I think that'll be a great way. If you did that already, that's cool. If you haven't checked out Outdoor Class, outdoorclass.com, and then just use, if you decide to do it, code LIVEWILD or code REMI, because it'll give you a discount. But also the main value is these little webinars that I've been doing and just a little get together. So if you guys want to do that, feel free to do that. I think it's a really great resource. Combine that with this podcast, and you're really going to put yourself in a good position of having some knowledge that I think, you know, you just can't really get anywhere else. I wish that when I started elk hunting, you know, I had some of these resources, because it would have taken years to kind of, or I would say like shorten the learning curve by years. It's almost too good. I think the success rates are definitely going up because we do have so much extra information. You know, a lot of the stuff that I learned, I had to learn the hard way. And it was just like days, countless days in the field, and a lot of days chasing and not a lot of days killing. But over the years, you know, I found these ways that I just ended up being like, okay, this is what I got to do in this scenario. And honestly, even when you go through these courses and hear this stuff, I think the best part about it is hearing all these little scenarios, and then when a scenario kind of matches it when you're out in the field, then you go, oh, I'm going to try this because it worked for this person. And that's really where a lot of success comes from, is just like matching the techniques and the scenarios, right? Every day is different. Every single day you're out there, something different happens. But if you're out there enough, you start to find these patterns. And that's what we're trying to dissect here, is like, okay, what works best in these scenarios? And so I think if you can match a scenario to a tactic, you're going to be a lot more successful in the long run. So until next week, everyone, I'm just going to say, bugle on, Garth. Let's go chase some bulls. Catch you guys later.